Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. O Worshipful One, please give us direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next. Purport. Brahma is the direct recipient of Vedic knowledge from the personality of Godhead, and anyone discharging his entrusted duties in disciplic succession from Brahma is sure to gain fame in this life and salvation in the next. The disciplic succession from Brahma is called the Brahma Sampradaya, and it descends as follows. Brahma, Narada, Vyas, Madhvamuni, Purnapragya, Padmanab, Nurhari, Madhava, Akshopya, Jayatirtha, Gyanasindhu, Dayanidhi, Vidyanidhi, Rajendra, Jayadharma, Purushottam, Brahmanyatirtha, Vyasatirtha, Lakshmipati, Madhavendrapuri, Ishwarapuri, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Swarup Damodar, and Sri Rupa Goswami and others, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishna Das Goswami, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanathi Chakravati, Jagannath Das Babaji, Bhaktivinod Thakur, Gaura Kishora Das Babaji, Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. This line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material, but both are on the progressive march towards the same goal of Krishna consciousness. Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshuro Militangena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Gena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Gurun Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavam Cha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopisha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurange Radhe Vrindavanishwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Zandi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So verse again. Tadvidehi namastu byam karma shvidyatma shaktishu yakritveha yasho vishwagamutra chabhavegati. O worshipful one, please give us your direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so that we can follow it for the fame and for fame in this life and progress in the next. So very interesting chapter text in the Bhagavatam, very instructive, as the next text will be spoken by the personality whom is being spoken to here. Anyone would like to tell me who is speaking this verse? Anyone knows? Who? Manu. Which Manu? Thank you. Svayambhuva Manu. And who is he speaking to? Lord Brahma, yes. And who is speaking this pastime? Maitreya Muni, yes. And who is he speaking to? Vidura. And they're conveying a conversation between who? Shukadeva Goswami and Parikshit Maharaj. And that conversation is being spoken by Suta Goswami to Shaunaka Rishi, the representative of the sages of Naimisharanya. And our purport is by Srila Prabhupada. So here we have the perfect disciplic succession traveling down, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport. So sometimes the Bhagavatam is like a map. You know, if you walk into a big park and you're like, which part of the park am I in? And you need that little sign that says, you are here. So sometimes you need to catch up with where exactly am I and who's speaking to whom and at what point. Especially because the title of this chapter is The Appearance of Lord Varahadev. And we're not talking about Lord Varahadev at this stage. But we are having a very powerful conversation between two great personalities, one of whom is Lord Brahma, who is the engineer of the entire universe. And at this stage in the pastime, actually, he's coming off of just being a little bit frustrated. Believe it or not, actually, the engineer of the universe from time to time becomes a little upset. And he's frustrated. Anyone remembers why he was a little frustrated or upset? Sorry, I like to keep everyone awake, so I just engage everyone. Yes, he wanted to increase population. And so he had some sons to do that, right? Four of them, in fact. And he instructed them to get married and increase population. And what did they say? They said, married nahe. They said, I'm not getting married. We're going to stay brahmachari. And those four personalities were the four Kumaras. And so Lord Brahma was a little bit perturbed, yes? Because he had a mission. And who gave him that mission? Krishna gave him the mission to do what? Create the entire universe, and not only create the universe, but to populate the universe. Means put people in it, put living entities into it. And so therefore he had a specific mission that he had to fulfill, and therefore he gave birth to the four Kumaras, and he instructed them, Lord Brahma instructed them to get married. And they said, no, we're not going to get married because we don't want to get entangled in the material world. Interesting. This is like, this conversation's been going on from the dawn of time. To be brahmachari or not to be brahmachari. And actually, it's described that the only the only instruction from the spiritual master that you can refuse is the instruction to get married. So if your spiritual master says, get married, you can say, with all due respect, Gurudev, I want to stay brahmachari. So we see lots of people try to stay brahmachari. Not forever, always, but like that. That's the only instruction. So the four Kumars, they took that service up of remaining brahmachari. But Lord Brahma, he had a service, and that service was to do what? To populate the universe. So he needed people who were willing to actually follow him. So anyway, previous end of the previous chapter, some different aspects were described, but then Lord Brahma created from himself two personalities, and those personalities were, God bless you, may Krishna continue to bless you with pure devotional service. Any who did he create? Two personalities. We already said one of them. Yes, Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, yes, who is the wife of Swayambhuva Manu. And Swayambhuva Manu here is speaking. And he's speaking in a very interesting way. And if we look at these verses, if it's up there, first he's showing deep respect to his father, Lord Brahma, and he's calling him, O Worshipful One. Just curious, how many of you, when you speak to your father, say, O Worshipful One? Anyone here? And we don't want to get into what you might say to your father. You might address your father. If you're anything like me, in the teenage years, you address your parents in most despicable ways. But actually, here we're being shown the way that we should address. And if you remember, there was a pastime of Srila Prabhupada. He gave initiation to Brahmananda and Gargamuni, who were brothers. And present at the initiation was their mother. And he instructed them to go and first, before you take initiation from me, you go and take blessings. You bow down in front of your mother and you offer her respects. Then later it's described, they shared that they, when they used to go and visit their home, they would knock on the door, and when their mother would open the door, she'd be like, where are they? And they'd be bowing down at the doorstep, offering obeisances to their mother. So actually, we should offer respect to our parents. Parents are considered our first gurus, our first gurus. It's very easy to forget that they used to wipe your backside and throw your nappies in the trash, in the rubbish bin. You know, we forget so easily how much energy. Of course, if anyone here is a parent, any parents, it is not a parent. Most everyone is. So if you have children, and that's why parents say, one day you'll understand. Because you give so many years selflessly sacrificing for a child, and then the child turns around one day to you and kind of says, you know, not so many good terms. So it shows so much disrespect. It's very difficult. It's also like that in spiritual life. Anyone here is a mentor? Any mentors? One senior devotee described that the mentorship system is more like the tormentorship system, which I disagreed with, but anyway, some devotees may feel like that. So even as a mentor or as someone who is preaching or leading, sometimes you see that devotees come in, and when they first come, they're very receptive, very open, but as they move into the teenage years of their spiritual life, they want to have their own identity, and they usually don't want to listen to anyone else. They certainly don't want to listen to you, who gave them so much guidance in the beginning, because they need to become their own independent person. It's actually a natural course of life. So somehow Lord Brahma has had to deal with the four Kumars. Now he's got Swayambhuva Manu, and Swayambhuva Manu is saying, O Worshipful One, please give us your direction. Shishashteham sadimam tvam prapanam. Right? It was only when Arjuna admitted that I have become completely bewildered about my duty, and he submitted himself to Krishna and said, please instruct me. Tadvidi prani patena pariprasnena sevya. We have to approach a spiritual master and we have to inquire from them how? submissively. Not like, what's up, Guruji? What should I do? It should be a little more submissive than that. So here he's saying, please give us direction. O worshipful one, please give us direction for what? For the execution of duty. So they don't want just instructions for the sake of it being gyan or being knowledge, but they want to know, how can I do something? How can I perform my duty? What is my, we often hear, what is my dharma, right? And again and again and again in the Bhagavad Gita, it says one has to do their dharma. But often we're quite bewildered about what is our dharma. Anyone here finds like bewildering, what am I actually meant to be doing? Am I just meant to be a pot washer or a floor cleaner for the rest of my life? Am I meant to just be a book distributor for my life? Am I meant to be a manager my whole life? Am I meant, what is my identity? What is my dharma? And here Swayambhuva Manu is asking specifically, give me some direction, give us, me and my wife, give us direction so that we can execute our duty. And then he qualifies that by saying, within our working capacity, which I found very interesting. And I love the Bhagavatam because literally every word, every phrase has value. Sometimes we just read through very quickly and we think, oh, at least I did my reading for the day. But actually, you can just read every word and try to unpack and unlock and understand. Here he's saying, we want to know how to execute our duty within our working capacity. What do you think that means, within our working capacity? Any thoughts? Within our abilities? Okay, according to Varnashram, within our nature, which relates to Varnashram, and would certainly mean according to our capacity. Someone else? Anyone else? Yes. Considering whatever our limitations may be. Yeah, that's humility, right? I may have some limitations. Dhruva Maharaj was in the forest. Narada Muni came. He was also humble, submissive. Narada Muni gave him an instruction. What did he say to him? He said, go home, little kid. Get out of the forest. What are you doing here? This is crazy. You're just like a little kid. Go home. And what did Dhruva Maharaj say? He said, maybe you should go home. I'm not going anywhere. I'm staying here. So give me an instruction that's going to be useful to me, or, you know, I'm not listening to you, basically. And then Narada Muni understood. He already understood, but he was testing him. And then he then stated, yes, of course, you are a kshatriya. And you've been offended and upset. So right now you're looking for a certain type of thing. So I have to instruct you accordingly, according to nature. This is a very interesting thing because it isn't always a one-size-fits-all program. It isn't that one instruction fits everyone. We were just discussing the other day how Srila Prabhupada, if you really look through, he instructed everyone individually, so individually. Although there are certainly instructions that fit everyone, chanting Hare Krishna, following the four regulative principles, these aspects. But we were just reading and chasing rhinos about Shyamasundar Prabhu, and how different things that Shyamasundar Prabhu was getting into, one of which he was getting into mining and trading and watching gold prices and doing all kinds of things. And then they wound up with Prabhupada in Switzerland and Zurich sitting watching the board, seeing how much the price of gold was going up. And different devotees found out about this, and they went there, the GBC men went, because they thought, well, this is gambling, and Prabhupada's involved in this also with Shyamasundar, so Shyamasundar has pulled them into some gambling program. So they went there to meet with him, and they were like, Prabhupada, this is gambling. And they made their presentation, and Prabhupada said, yes, it is. So you shouldn't do it. But Shyamasundar knows how to do it, so it's okay for him. But Shyamasundar Prabhu, he explains that Prabhupada used to be very lenient with him because he knew that if he was too heavy, then Shyamasundar would crack and go away. And then if you go back in the history and you see all the different service that Shyamasundara Prabhu performed over the years, like I was just hearing this morning in the audio book of Lilamrita about the organization of the Pandal program in Mumbai. And there you go, there's Shyamasundara again, you know, carving the first Jagannath, the Mantra Rock Festival, coming to London, establishing London, building the temple there, Bhaktivedanta Manor, he was instrumental in that program, Mumbai, he was so many things he was doing. So Prabhupada was, he was so expert at knowing how to bend the devotees without breaking them. And understanding each and everyone's kind of nature. So this is something that sometimes we don't always get, maybe because we don't really understand what is our own nature or what is someone else's nature, and trying to see how they can best be engaged, how we can, as Vaisheshika Prabhu often quotes, quoting Srila Prabhupada, we have to learn how to fan the spark. And the spark may be slightly different for each and every individual. So within our working capacity, why? Then it says so that we can follow it. So we want you to give instructions, not to just give us instructions, but so we can actually follow it. Anyone here has ever gotten an instruction and said, oh, that's really good, and then not followed it? By the way, I think that's actually considered one of the 10 offenses, especially if it comes from the spirit, direct spiritual master. Of course, we may have so many different spiritual masters, shiksha gurus. So, and then follow it. And follow it, why? Why does Swayambhuva Manu want to follow it? Because he wants to be famous. Haribo. Pure devotional service, ki jai. Right? Okay. So you may think, well, this doesn't make sense. Why are we reading this? He's following this for fame. Fortunately, Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport and goes into great depth to help us to understand that. And in some place in the Bhagavatam, it's also described that the devotees of the Lord are the most famous. The devotees of the Lord are the most famous. Their fame becomes a byproduct. So in one sense, when Swayambhuva Manu is saying, please help me to do this for fame, he wants that whatever he does within his capacity as a duty to his father, Lord Brahma, he wants it to be of some significance. He wants it to be of some use. He wants it to be remembered. He wants it to be, you know, for a higher purpose, for good. And a natural byproduct of that in the material world is that one becomes remembered. One becomes famous. And he says, in this life and for progress in the next. So often we hear that statement. It means that in the next life I want to go to heaven, to the higher planets. I want to enjoy, exactly. But that is not necessarily, the same statements can be made for someone who is in a materialistic mindset and someone who is in a purely devotional mindset. Because we're also performing devotional service here so that we get some, to a greater or lesser extent. Are we not thinking about the next life? Yes, of course. You know, Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, let me be born as a bug in my next life, but let that bug be in the house of devotees so I can do what? Eat the remnants of their prasad. So Prabhupada, of course, gave us that we want to go back to Godhead. Yes, we want to go back to Godhead. Is that in the next life? Of course. It's also in this life. You can go back to Godhead in this life. Not only meaning at the end of this physical body, but in this life you can also become jiva mukta, right? You can become liberated in this life. Prahlad Maharaj was seeing Krishna everywhere. That's non-different from being in the spiritual world. He was present to the Lord and everywhere and everything and every moment. So in this life and in the next. So then Srila Prabhupada goes into... Anyone has any comments, reflections, questions on this part before I get into the next part? Yes, Tadvavit Prabhu, by the way, nice to see you. Hare Krishna Prabhu. Please forgive me for sitting here on this raised platform in front of you, Prabhu. Hare Krishna.
I would like... Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Is that working? I would like to consider for a minute, you know, this Atma Shakti.
Huh.
We were providing answers to your question, you know, what does Atma Shakti mean mm-hmm. within our working capacity? It strikes me that Manu and his wife were, you know, extremely unusual because they were produced from Brahma's body. They, in a sense, didn't grow up. There were no people around them. They had absolutely no, like a blank slate. No life experience at all. Very unusual. Would you comment on that? It's kind of a mystical thing. He creates them as a, kind of like Adam and Eve.
Yeah, okay, very nice. Yeah, thank you for bringing up that word Atma Shakti Shu, you know, within our capacity, which means Shakti means potency, like if you're empowered, so it's Atma. So how is me, the soul, empowered? And we understand we're all divine sparks of the splendor of God, but we all radiate in our own special way. So like a jewelry box. You know, if you open a jewelry box, it has so many different jewels, but they're all unique in their own way. So, yeah, at this point, it's interesting, but I was meditating on this, not meditating so much, but when I read the verse describing the 12 Mahajans, the first one is Swayambhu. And Swayambhu is Brahma. And then when it comes to Manu, it just says Manu. But we know the first Manu, and the Manu is being referred to, is Swayambhuva Manu, because he is directly emanated from the body of Swayambhu Brahma. So he's obviously specifically empowered, he and his wife, as they've emanated directly from the body of Lord Brahma. So then they have some special Shakti. Special Shakti and potency. And of course, yes, they don't have apparently any life experience. But in one sense, we could say Lord Brahma was born on a lotus. We don't see that he was born there sucking his thumb. Like, da, da, da. You know, like he was just in our universe, Brahma, four-headed, eight-armed, sitting on a lotus, thinking, what the heck am I doing here? Where am I? What's going on? And then he hears the word tapa, and he performs tapasya, and by that he becomes enlightened by Krishna. Shukadeva Goswami, 16-year-old boy in the womb, all of his days, more or less, comes out for a short time, goes immediately into the forest. Then Vedavyas sends some sadhus to chant the Bhagavatam. He becomes enticed. He comes back, hears the Bhagavatam, goes on walkabout and finds Parikshit Maharaj and begins speaking Bhagavatam. 16-year-old boy in the assembly of sages that were, some of them, hundreds or thousands of years old. So in one sense, we may sometimes think that you have to have life experience to be empowered, which in many cases may be true. Like, to be able to do certain things, you might say, do you have experience with this? But the thing that comes to mind is Srila Prabhupada, when I think it was Gargamuni, I think, brought the first dictaphone to him. And he had spent the whole time in the shop figuring out how to use it with the pedals and the mic and different things. And he gave it to Prabhupada and he said, Prabhupada, I'll show you how to use it. And within a matter of moments, Prabhupada was pushing the pedal and immediately using it. And he thought, how the heck did he figure out how to do that? Because Prabhupada was obviously empowered to understand the basic nature and workings of things in the material world that might bewilder other people. So I guess my reflection, because I hadn't really thought about that point, is just that they emanated from the body of Lord Brahma, so they were clearly empowered directly from Lord Brahma, who, by the way, his body consists primarily of intelligence. He's in like Shuddha Sattva. His body doesn't deteriorate. His body is primarily intelligence, and they emanated directly from his body. So therefore, their bodies are likely also predominated by pure intelligence, which means, in one sense, they don't necessarily need to go through the learning stages because they've emanated directly from his body. They're already going to be empowered with much knowledge. So like that. Anyway, those are a few thoughts. Tattva Viparu, does that work? Is that okay? Have no idea where that came from. It's like Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, you just asked me a question and somehow you inspired Super Soul to speak something back. So, but thank you. Okay, yes. Prabhuji.
You were saying how Prabhupada knew his disciples and he engaged them a particular way. So the guru is like that. He knows the disciples' nature and he can engage the disciple. But unfortunately, most devotees don't get this association of the guru. They're left with the temple authorities having to engage them. And the temple authorities don't necessarily have a relationship because they're not around most of the time. Not in the morning, anyway.
Okay.
So it seems like devotees kind of struggle. This is my experience, anyway. They struggle for many years trying to find this identity, how they would fit in to the society, or at least how they would even fit into a particular temple and be engaged for a lifetime. Because they don't get that close input, someone who really knows them. Could you say something about that?
Sure. So, in one sense, I guess the first statement is that, of course, the spiritual master should know the nature of his disciples. One might say they don't always know that either. It may be confusing for them. It's not an absolute blanket statement. That's one thing. But the main point seemed to be that there's generally a lack of association for devotees with persons who do have that insight and are able to guide them, whether they're temple leaders or whether they're spiritual master, like Diksha Gurus, Shiksha Gurus, in whatever capacity, that sometimes it may be difficult for people to get the close association with someone who knows them well enough to be able to guide them in that way. So somehow what comes to mind is that one thing is that someone who's a little knowledgeable, they might not need to be with someone for a long time to see what their nature is also. I remember one devotee describing to someone else that you see how that person walks. Just by the physiognomy of their walk, he could tell which kind of varna he was most suited to. And turned out to be pretty correct. Another situation, I remember when I'll tell a little personal story. When I was first coming, I was brought by a very good friend of mine. And he and I were very good friends for many years, many, many years, from childhood. And although we had great appreciation for each other, we could hardly get along. I was always criticizing the way he did things, and he was always criticizing the way I did things. And we thought, you know, I thought the way that I was is the way that he should be, and he thought the way he was is the way that I should be. And it was just this perpetual thing. And for a short time, we lived together, and we were getting on each other's nerves so bad that we decided, okay, I'm going to try to be what you think I should be and act like you for a week, and you should act like me for a week. And so because he was super laid back, you know, he was like, it's okay, life happens, it'll come or it won't come. He was very detached, and I was like, no, you have to take action, you have to make things happen. And it was like, it seemed like one way was right and the other way was wrong, but who was right, who was wrong? So for 1 week, we tried this test, and I just tried to chill out and hang out and lay back and just wait for life to happen. And I was going completely mad, just like trying to sit there and do nothing. And he started to try to be like hyperactive and make plans and set goals. And he wound up getting very sick. And at the end of the week, we realized, I don't want to act like you. And, you know, it doesn't suit me. But we still didn't really have an answer. Then sometime later, we wound up connecting with senior devotee. And the first thing he said was, he asked, well, actually, when he met me, he said, what is your nature? And I was already working in the corporate world. And I said, well, I'm a self-starter. I work good in teams, you know, self-development. You know, I started giving all these things. He said, I don't want your CV. He said, I want to know what is your nature. Although all of that already said what my nature was. He said, sit down here, the two of you, and you read these verses of the Bhagavad Gita, 1842, 1843, and 1844. And so we sat down, we started reading, and we were reading the first verse describing the nature of a Brahmin. And I was thinking, oh, that's like my friend. He's very peaceful, he's very calm, cool. And then we read the next one, and it was like Kshatriya, and he was like, that's just like you. And then we read the next one, we were both like, yeah, we're not really so much into farming, stuff like that. And of course, I don't know who relates to being a Shudra. No one seems to naturally get into that. But so we were both like, wow. And then he came back into the room and he started talking with us. And at that moment, we both realized we had individual natures. We just were made the way we were made, and neither of us was wrong to be that way. It was just the way that we physically were made. It was the composition of our nature. Physical and, I guess you could say, subtle and gross. And somehow we had this kind of breakthrough in that moment that was like, okay, so I guess I have to act according to my nature and you have to act according to your nature. And then that way we have to... And then he explained how these natures and our positioning in Varna also complement one another, and how we could look at using and utilizing each other's strengths rather than doing what we had done for many years, which was criticize and blaspheme each other for being that way. So I don't know if I've answered your question, but my point is that it is good that we have someone in our life that helps to direct us, but in one sense, we also don't need to have someone necessarily that is there every moment of the day. If we're serious and sincere, as Krishna says, and what is it, I think it's 10-10, tesham sadatu yuktam nam bhajitam pratipurvikam. He explains in that purport that even if someone is so thick that they can't hear from the Spirit, Krishna from within the heart can also reveal these things to us. So one just has to be serious and sincere. But at the same time, it is good and very valuable and vitally important for us to find some senior association in our life whom we can take shelter of, whom we can get guidance and advice from, like that. So I tried to give an answer that didn't get too political. Tattvavit Puruz, I think, was it?
Interesting.
When we were brahmacharis, we'd go on book distribution, and we'll even now. And you would see devotees distributing Prabhupada's books differently. And they would all distribute books according to their nature.
Yeah.
Like someone who's a Vaishya, they'll be kind of like attached to wanting to distribute it and getting the money and getting the result. Someone who's a Kshatriya, they distribute Prabhupada's books in a very kind of like Kshatriya way, like military. And then someone who's Brahminical, they would spend more time with people and speak and be like... So if we just
and a Shudra would be like sleeping and not distributing the book. No, just kidding. Just kidding.
A Shudra would be serving the other devotees. Maybe, I don't know. That's what they're meant to do. But yeah, I mean, if we all perform Sankirtan, we can all do it according to our nature, and Krishna will reveal eventually what we're meant to do through that service.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Tadvavit Prabhu, and then we'll conclude. This mic, please.
Ayurveda and astrology also from a person's nature.
Ayurveda and astrology also, you said? Form.
Make up a person's nature.
Okay. On that, do they form it, or do they just give you a map of what it is?
Well, if
oh, you mean the placement of the planets has an impact on one and someone's...
But you were describing your friend who was different than you.
Yeah.
That could have been because of the Ayurvedic composition of his body, and your nature could have been based partly on also the Ayurvedic composition.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, generally, yeah, someone is more Vata or someone is more Pitta. And Prabhuji, you also have your hand raised.
Damodar Prabhu also has his hand up, so maybe there's time.
Say again?
Damodar Prabhu also has his hand up, so maybe if there's time, he can also ask or share.
Whoever, yeah.
Yeah. In the text itself... Swayambhuva Manu is saying to Brahma that, you give me direction, you give me instruction, and this will help with fame.
Yeah.
Right? So it's almost like Swayambhuva Manu is desiring fame.
Mm-hmm.
How do we understand it? Should devotees go for fame? And that's why they should do service. And that's the kind of service that they should be asking for.
Yeah. I mean, it worked for me for the last 25 years. I don't know about you, Prabhu, but just kidding. So I did touch on that a little bit before, that there can be the idea of fame. As Prabhupada mentions in the purport, he says, anyone discharging his entrusted duties in disciplic succession from Brahma is sure to gain fame in this life and salvation in the next. So from a material perspective, these things can look like, oh, I want recognition, I want honor, I want prestige, you know, pran, pratishta, and also I want to get my moksha at the end of it, you know. I'm not doing this for nothing, okay? I better get some liberation at the end or forget it, you know. But from a devotional perspective, what I described was that fame means that help me to do something that will be useful, remembered, recognized, not necessarily for me, but because I do it, it's of benefit to others, and therefore people will recognize that. And Srila Prabhupada made the statement that the devotees of the Lord, they are the most famous. So as a natural byproduct of the performance, Prabhupada says in the purport, by performing your devotional service in line of disciplic succession, naturally fame will come. Prabhu, you're famous, whether you like it or not. I even brought my pen. I'm going to get your autograph at the end of this. You know, just, I told devotees in New York, I'm coming back, and they're like, make sure you get an autograph for me. So, but of course, the danger is that when we hear fame, Yashoda, the word for fame is what? Yasha. Mother Yashoda, her name basically means famous. She's famous because she is the mother of Krishna. Prabhupada said, we can be proud about one thing, and what is that? That I am the servant of my spiritual master. So it's not that fame is a bad thing. It just depends on how we try to encompass that fame. So when I read it, I thought the same thing. It sounds like he's asking for recognition and liberation here. And that's probably not. But then Prabhupada immediately clears that up. And then he gives a long list of personalities who are immortalized now in the pages of the Bhagavatam, in the front of the Bhagavad Gita. These persons are now famous, right? How many millions of people have read their names in print and books that are distributed in 70 languages, 80 languages, more languages? So if your name gets distributed in print, right, then you're going to be considered famous. So Prabhupada sets it all up. They were following instructions in disciplic succession, so naturally they are going to be remembered. They're going to be glorified. So I see it in that way. There may be other ways to see it also, but that's how I understood it. That this isn't specifically referring to materialistic fame. It's referring to the aspect of fame that comes as a natural byproduct of the performance of devotional service in line of disciplic succession.
But some woman is actually asking for it and is not really giving any specific reasons. He's just saying, for the sake of fame, give me instructions for the sake of fame. You know,
like, yeah. And so, like I said, we can understand the word fame from a material perspective, or we can understand the word fame from a spiritual perspective. And so when he's asking for it, that's why I said he's not asking for me to be like in the spotlight. He's asking for me to be able to do some service that will be recognized and remembered, something that's significant. Srila Prabhupada said, my only difficulty is that I can't think small. Prabhupada is also famous. Fame is not a bad thing. You're saying he's asking for it, but where I'm trying to explain that he's asking to be engaged in a service that will be like significant. Let me be, according to my nature, let me do something that is fully involving my nature, and that will be significant, that will be remembered, that will be something like that. But yeah, Damodar Prabhu. There's lots of hands. I'm not in charge here, so someone has to say when we stop. I think the most famous person in the room here is you.
I was going to try and provide a definition of this fame.
Please, yes.
So, and I see that it's actually, as you said, it's not a fame of this world. It's a fame in the eyes of Krishna and his devotees.
Hmm.
So it's, whether it's recognized or not, one is still famous.
Yes.
In the true sense. Yeah, in that sense.
Here's a textbook definition. The state of being known or talked about by many people, especially on account of notable achievements. So the way I saw it is that he's asking, please let me do something that is praiseworthy. But not in a way like I want the praise, but let me do something that is praiseworthy because it's significant. Let me engage my energy in doing something that is great for the service of God, that will be seen as praiseworthy. That's the way I'm understanding it. Someone else? This okay. Since you've already gone, Prabhu, can this Prabhuji? Sorry. Okay. No problem.
About faith. Prabhupada mentions in the purport, he says there's two lines, one's spiritual, one's material. And we could also see it in this way, that fame, sometimes we come to Krishna consciousness and we have ulterior motives. We want to be...
Sometimes?
Famous. Oh, yeah, most of the time. We want to be famous, we want this, we want that. But then over time, because Prabhupada says in the purport, so those two lines, they eventually lead to the same thing eventually, even though one is material. So our motivation may be material to begin with, but if we keep on the path, then our motivation will become pure in time.
Nice.
I guess you can see it in that way.
Yeah.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class.
Thank you for being here. Otherwise, I wouldn't have anyone to talk to.
I have two questions. Is that okay?
I'm not in charge. I'm just sitting on the big seat. Is someone else here?
My first question is that... if I'm not mistaken, I think you said previously within the class that Brahma is made out of like mainly intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And then you said Shuddha Sattva.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, please correct me if I'm wrong, I think Shuddha Sattva is transcendental, is it? No?
Vishuddha Sattva is transcendental.
Okay, yeah. Okay, sorry.
Just means it's pure goodness.
Right. Okay.
Still goodness.
Yeah. My second one is, with understanding our varnas and how you talked about that, we understand that pure bhakti is above these material designations. So as a devotee, should we aspire for pure bhakti or working within our varna?
Sounds like a question Arjuna keeps asking Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, right? Should I renounce or should I fight? And he said, yes, you should do both. So Prabhupada, although we know I'm not, you know, Brahman, I'm not Kshatriya, I'm not Vaishya, I'm not Shudra, I'm not all these things, I'm simply Das, Anudas, Anudas. At the same time, Prabhupada, at the end of his life, said only 50% of my work is done because I haven't introduced Varnashram. So our understanding, again, in the same point, is that Daivi Varnashram and Varnashram are slightly different. Varnashram means it's already functioning in that way anyhow. Prabhupada said it's already going on to some extent. It's just not being organized properly. But Daivi Varnashram means that I understand what is my constitution according to the material modes of nature, and I act according to that. The Bhagavad Gita is completely that. Arjuna is a pure devotee. He has the direct association of Krishna. There's no doubt that he's not a liberated personality. But here he is on the battlefield being told to kill people. What is he meant to do? He's meant to do that while basically remembering Krishna, or he's meant to do it as an act of devotion for Krishna. Still, he has to act according to his nature. There's no way we won't act according to our nature. Krishna says, no problem, you don't have to be here because you have free will. So if you want to go to the forest and avoid being on the battlefield and killing, which is according to your nature, but you want to go to the forest and act like you're a Brahmin or act like you're a sadhu, I won't be able to protect you because you're not acting according to your nature. And then the acharyas, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, they explain that if you're in the forest for a while, you're going to see two sadhus get into some disagreement. And your nature as a kshatriya, which is justice, is going to come out, and you're going to try to make justice out of something you shouldn't be involved in. And then you're going to suffer. So in this way, our nature is going to come out whether we like it or not. Better that we work according to that nature and engage it in Krishna's service. So just like the four Kumars, their nature according to ashram was that they were brahmacharis. So it wasn't pleasing to their father. It wasn't pleasing to Brahma. He had a mission, but they acted according to whatever was their nature. And they went on to be sadhus who roamed all around the universe, spreading fame and glory to others, right? But here you have Swayambhuva Manu and Shatarupa, who are basically going to engage in sexual activity and produce progeny. And what progeny did they produce? Who is their progeny? Anyone remembers? Huh? Priyavrata and Uttanapad. Thank you. I was trying to remember Uttanapad. Priyavrata and Uttanapad, just if we take those two, are like such great personalities. I think this is like, this is a Brahmin subtle way of saying, will you please get off the Vyasa Sun? Everyone here is very hungry. You must be hungry, Poo, don't you? So we have a nature, but our understanding is that I act according to that nature, understanding that that's not me, the spirit soul. That's just the physical body that my spirit soul is in. You can drive a Porsche or you can drive a Skoda, but you're still the spirit soul inside of that Porsche or Skoda, right? It's not that I am that, but I do have to understand I'm in that vehicle. I still have to act. I can't take a Skoda on the motorway and try to drive as fast as a Porsche. It probably won't happen. Of course, I'm not trying to criticize a Skoda. I don't know anything. I just grabbed out of my head some. But the point is that one vehicle is made for speed and the other may not be. It may be made for convenience or, you know, to be affordable and still get the job done. It's not that one is better than the other. They just have different designations and different purposes. But I'm neither one of those. I'm simply the spirit soul. But I'm still in the body that I have. And I have to act to a greater or lesser extent according to the nature of that body. I don't know if that made sense or...
It's very, very good, thank you.
Okay, thank you. What's your name, Prabhu?
Jay.
Jay. Jay, I'm Jay. Nice to meet you, Jay. Hare Krishna. Jai, jai, jai. Shall I finish now, Tarun Prabhu? Anyone else have any questions? Anyone has? Oh, okay, Mata. Now, if a lady says she's... Okay.
I had a question about the disciplic succession.
Oh, God,
because
okay.
Because you just read the disciplic succession, and it seems to be, you know, coming down from Krishna, but then in the Bhagavad Gita, it says that the disciplic succession was broken, and so Krishna had to speak it again to Arjuna.
Yeah.
So how do you understand this?
Beautiful, thank you. So just like at the end, and I don't know if... Oh, it's gone now. At the end, it says, this line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material. But both are on the progressive march towards the same goal of Krishna consciousness. So even here in the purport, Srila Prabhupada has given the disciplic succession to himself, all the way up to him, which, by the way, again, this purport just blows away the whole idea of the Ritvik philosophy. Like, okay, so now it all stops. You just get listed out all these names, but then there's no more. But Prabhupada also addresses that question, and he says that there are different disciplic successions. We understand there are four sampradayas. They all also have a disciplic succession, all of them bona fide as long as someone is following them. The point is not necessarily, and the disciplic succession with Arjuna is a kshatriya line of disciplic succession, if that makes sense. The line of Manu is a genealogical line of disciplic succession. Our lineage, he's saying, is primarily spiritual. We also understand it's primarily shiksha oriented. It's not even diksha oriented, but some disciplic succession lines may be like diksha lines. And also, if you look here, Madhavendra Puri is listed. So when the disciplic succession comes to Madhavendra Puri, Madhavendra Puri had several disciples. So he will have another lineage that breaks off from that. Does that make sense? When it gets to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya had the six Goswamis. We're Rupanugas, which means we're following specifically in the line of Srila Rupa Goswami. And he didn't even, yeah, he did mention Rupa Goswami. He says Rupa Goswami and others. Sanatan Goswami has his own lineage. Jiva Goswami has his lineage. Raghunath Das Goswami, Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Gopal Bhatta Goswami. They all have their own lineage. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's just this is it and that's all there is. This is just our family tree. Does that make sense? So Arjuna, the lineage coming down from Vivashwan and the sun god, through, you know, disciplic succession in the Bhagavad Gita, that's a different lineage. So like that. Okay. And someone else here? Yes, Prabhu. What is your name, Mataji? Subhadra. Okay. All of a sudden I do. What is your mom's name? That's right. My gosh. I just saw her. I was just with her in Houston. Wow, that's amazing. Nice to see you. Hare Krishna. Okay, yes.
Krishna, in the beginning you were telling the story about the four Kuramas.
Kumaras.
Who wanted to renounce, not have children.
Yeah.
But I remember from a history class that in the beginning for Yagyas, it was required to have a son to be able to perform this one special yagya so you can free yourself from birth and death. So there was never...
You have to
there
speak...
Was, there was never really a... like they wouldn't even consider renunciation because you needed a son. So I wonder how does this all make sense now that we don't need this yagya anymore, or did something change? I think this was also in the first age, no? Like in the first yuga. So
yeah, Satya Yuga, yes.
So why did they said they didn't want to be entangled, they wanted to go back to Godhead.
Yes.
But you needed the sun to perform this yajna.
Gotcha. What is your name, Prabhu?
Theodore.
Theodore. Okay, Theodore. So, great question, and thank you for asking. Yes, it is correct. And in general, most people who are still in the material world, I mean, people in the material world who are having family, they often want to have a son. Because the idea, actually, a lot of people in the West don't even understand why they want to have a son. but Eastern culture, Vedic culture teaches us the purpose of having a son is because the son can then perform different rituals and activities to help all the predecessor, you know, family members to also continue to achieve forward progress even after they've passed from this world, right? So I'm not going to get into all the details, but that is correct. And that does still exist. Yes? Theoretically, it's still possible, and some people still perform some of these activities. But when you speak about pure devotional service, the understanding is that if you water the root of the tree, you don't need to water all the individual branches. Because you perform service to Krishna, and Krishna takes care of all those things. So Prahlad Maharaj, it was described when he asked Lord Nisringadev that, you know, I only have one request. He didn't want to ask for anything, but because Lord Nisringadev was pushing him to ask for a benediction, he said, just deliver my father. And he said, your father's already been delivered by dint of your devotional service. And in different places says different things, 7 generations ahead, 7 generations behind, they've all been delivered simply because of your devotional service. So in that way, we can understand that bhakti, pure devotional service, supersedes any of these ritualistic programs, which are usually meant just for elevation to higher planetary systems in the material world. Pure devotional service is meant for elevation to Vaikuntha, to the spiritual world, to Goloka, right? So bhakti supersedes all of those things. But as Prabhupada would say, most people, they can't accept that it's as simple as just chanting Hare Krishna. They want to do this thing and that thing, and especially if they have knowledge of all of those things, it's hard to let go of that. So even still, you may find that there are devotees who are chanting 16 rounds, initiated Brahmins, Hare Krishnas, and they still have a little bit of the residual mentality that I have to perform these types of ceremonies and sacrifices. At the same time, we should understand that even Lord Chaitanya performed those sacrifices, because if you do it with a different consciousness, if you do it with a consciousness for assisting them to make advancement in bhakti, then it's also okay to perform those yajnas. Does that make sense? So it's not that we have to completely give it up, but we have to give up the fruitive mentality of performing them for the purpose of me getting some benefit or them getting material benefit. Does that make a little bit of sense?
I imagine this is also why we remember the ones who passed, like who moved on.
Yeah.
Because you do, like it's read just now, an hour ago, that a devotee does not lament the living or the dead.
That's right, yeah. We could just say, why do we put those pictures up of dead people? They're dead, their bodies are dead, their spirit is eternal. We don't need to do anything but chant Hare Krishna. Yeah. But at the same time, we have to remember we're in bodies, we're functioning in a social structure, and we can actually still show love and compassion. We don't need to be hard-hearted in that sense. Is that okay? Thank you, Theodore.
Thank you very much.
So I'm going to stop now, because whoever asks the next question, there won't be anyone left in the room except for me. So Hare Krishna, thank you all very much. Grantara Srima Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava.